My name is Dan McNeil, and I really want to sincerely want to thank each of you individually and collectively as a group for coming here to share in your thoughts and your insights, your concerns, and possible solutions regarding today's discussion, which is acknowledgement and forgiveness, healing our racial history. I had originally had it titled A Black and White Issue, but the issue really is about healing, so I snuck in a change here. Mm-hmm. So the premise for this discussion is that one of the first things necessary for the cycle of racial healing to begin is for America to acknowledge in a meaningful, declarative, official, public, repentive manner its history of racism and racial atrocities against African Americans. And then for African Americans to collectively, through their national organizations like PUSH and NAACP and others, to publicly, in a declarative manner, release through forgiveness that history of racism and racial atrocities. To lift through forgiveness the unfair burden of guilt through lineage placed on the latter-day children of the perpetrators of those of that history of racial injustice. Thereby, through clear intentionality, clearing the collective psychic of the hurt and the pain and the resentment, guilt and anger of those African Americans and those whites who see and want to and are trying to move on to that new and better world. In its simplistic form, it is one group saying, "I've committed some grievous offenses upon you, and I am truly sorry." And the other group saying, "Yes, that is right. There has been much anger regarding this. However, that is past. We offer our forgiveness. Let us move on together." Although simplistic at its core, psychologists say that these steps are essential for the healing wounds of damaged relationships. And that's what we have, the damaged relationship. Acknowledgement is the first link broken in the chain of separation. Forgiveness starts the turn of the wheel of resolution back on the path of unity. Both acknowledgement and forgiveness does moral repair on the one who acknowledges and the one who forgives, as well as the recipient of each. The spirit is rinsed. Both are scriptural. And I'd like to read just two scriptures dealing with acknowledgement and then the other one dealing with forgiveness. This is from the Psalms, 32nd chapter 5. "I acknowledge my sins to thee, and I did not hide my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and thou didst forgive the guilt of my sin." Now, in particular, that was dealing with confessing the transgression to the Lord, but I think see us all as children of God, and as such, I think we can bless each other with the acknowledgement and forgiveness. The other one is on forgiveness, and this is from Matthew's. Matthew's 6, chapter 14. "For if you forgive men in their trespasses, your heavenly Father also," or your heavenly Creator, "also will forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Creator forgive your trespasses." It's interesting what happens when you focus on a situation or topic. Things seem to pop up and come towards you from unexpected places. I was at the VC Center, right where the pool hall begins. And I was just looking at all the antique work that was around there. And on the wall, there's a poem there in an Dear Abby column that talks about forgiveness. And I'd like to read this poem. It's by Robert Mueller, who was the former Assistant Secretary of the United Nations. And this poem, incidentally, was for International Forgiveness Week. And I had already started this and found this, so I found this poem very interesting. And I'd like to read the poem to you. It says, "Decide to forgive. Decide to forgive, for resentment is negative. Resentment is poisonous. Resentment diminishes and devours the self. Be the first to forgive, to smile and take the first step, and see happiness bloom on the face of your human brother and sister. Be always the first. Do not wait for others to forgive, for by forgiving, you become master of fate, the fashioner of life, the doer of miracles. To forgive is the highest, most beautiful form of love. In return, you will receive untold peace and happiness." And it's another little short piece that I stumbled upon. I think it's in the same column. "Only the brave know how to forgive. A coward never does. It is not in his nature." And then here's one little short one by George. Looks like it's Romish, and I like this one. "Forgiveness is the fragrance of the flower which clings fast to the heel that crushed it." So this is the ideal, to acknowledge and forgive. And this is what I see as one of the key ingredients that we as one people with different ethnics and different pigmentations have to come to grips with. Acknowledgement and forgive, is they're good ideas, but good ideas need landing wheels as well as wings. And it's here where the ideal meets the bumpy road of reality. It is here that the power of divine fellowship, through the process of honest discussion, that we will endeavor to put these principles into a blueprint for practice. So in sincerity and a spirit of resolution, let us discuss, saying what is really on our minds and in our hearts. Let us be only tied to the peace that truth may bring. Someone said that this is about feelings, you don't bury them dead, you bury them alive. And all the feelings that we have when we don't really speak out on them, they're alive inside us, and then they haunt and do harm to our spirits. So we will discuss under the assumption that no matter what is said, we're all trying to find the road to a better way. And your expressions of frustration and anger is as valid and as necessary for our liberation as your joy and experiences. So let's get down to the nuts and bolts. If we agree on the premise that acknowledgement will positively impact on the healing process, then the question becomes, what form should that acknowledgement take? An official statement from the president or Congress announced over the airways? Should it be a symbol, symbolic, like a national day or week set aside? And if this is done, should it be done in conjunction with the Declaration of Forgiveness, so that we and the world will see a day or a week set aside as a reminder that this country has set aside a time to celebrate the fact that it has at least symbolically healed itself in that particular area, to advance a model for other potential healings of diverse parties? Should this acknowledgement take the form of compensation, as it did in the case of the Japanese Americans who were incarcerated during the World War? If so, what form should this compensation take? Money, land, tax breaks, racial quotas? Where does racial compensation end and unfair and reverse discrimination begin? Example, racial quotas. What periods should be included in this period of acknowledgement and forgiveness? Should we go from slavery to the day of declaration, yes or no? Is this whole idea hypocritical in lieu of the fact that racism and institutional racism and otherwise still continue? Do you feel that it is an equitable compensation if given to African Americans? Then you shouldn't have to listen to that black stuff anymore. Should you say, well, we've paid, you've been compensated, I don't want to hear about that black history anymore? So these are some of the questions that I have that I put out here for discussion. And maybe what we should start with, or I'd like to start with is the very premise. The premise of acknowledgement and the premise of forgiveness. Is that a viable premise? Anybody want to step forward?
Is that something we can even do? Historically, I'm looking at it from the perspective that if we look back to before the Emancipation Proclamation, all the things, the slavery issues and everything that went on then, human rights issues that, well, wasn't even my family.
Mm-hmm.
So can even if we want to, even mm-hmm. if I want to say I'm sorry, does it really mean anything?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. One of the things that I mentioned to me wasn't clear about the lifting of the unfair burden of guilt on the lineage of the children. And as I talk of the perpetrators, as I talk to friends of mine, a lot of their responses is, well, I didn't do that, so why am I having to deal with it? And what I'm proposing as a possibility is not so much from the people, but from America as a whole. And the poem that I read was from an International Forgiveness Week. And I don't think that the fault lies in the idea, but I think the fault may lie in the amount of intensity and the focus that was brought into it. I think that something like this should be done in a very big, grandiose way, something on the same level as the Rose Bowl or the basketball championship. And it should be done in a spirit of both the forgiveness and the acknowledgement for both parties. And I think this is the ideal that will bring to attention as a reminder that that this relationship was stronger than the hurt that it bore. So I don't know if that answers your questions, but you know, any other questions or comments or inputs?
I think we've definitely inherited the legacy of those however many ancestors ago, because in a lot of ways we're boxed into a racist institutions, whether we want to be or not. And so whatever our 7 or 8 generations ago did, we're still, you know, definitely defined by that.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what we as individuals may think. But because we're a racist society, you know, we're in that box.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. And part of what I, you know, what hurts me is when I see good people trying to move forward, as this gentleman, as you, as all of us, and bump into, and this is I have a saying that I have in one of my poems, is that it's long past time to forgive, and I'm speaking of us as blacks, but it's much too soon to forget, because there is a continuation, there is a still that happening. But what I would like to see is an inclusiveness and a harmony of those people who are trying to address and move forward to that better day, not to run up against the guilt that is often put down on them because of the historic injustices. And people often just, because they feel impotent in terms of being able to impact on the situation, or because they run up against so much anger from African Americans regarding what has happened and putting that on them, that they just kind of either throw up their hands or just quietly hold to where they're at. So that's one of the things I think. I think it would at least in the intention. I have a very strong faith in intentionality and what that can do in terms of the seeds that it grows. You know, there was a song back in way back, I don't know, it was James Brown. And the song said something to the effect of, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud." And it was nothing but a song, but for a lot of blacks prior to that, they had not thought of themselves as black and proud. They had thought of themselves as black and inferior and black and less. And the reframe of that song played over there in their head, became an affirmation. Now, I think some people took that affirmation too far and would and start saying, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, and you white and you ain't right." and that's where it dips over to too much. We want to have a feeling of feeling good without going to a feeling of feeling superior or better. But the affirmation and the intention and the potency of this, that little line created, to a degree, a change in the consciousness of black people in terms of them being proud of themselves. And another thing that I think is important, and I do want to have a discussion, I don't want to tie this whole time up because I'm really here in a learning and exchange, but one of the questions would be, well, if we give compensations to African Americans, then we got to give it to the Indians, then we got to give it to the Latinos, and then we got to give it to this and that. I draw a lot of inspiration from music. There's a line from he's a poet, but he does it in music, and I think it's kind of humorous. It's Gil Scott Heron. I think it's called "It's a B Movie," and he says in the line, he says it sarcastically, "Human rights? No, how's he said? Women's rights, gay rights, black rights is all wrong. You know, first you give one person freedom, then the whole damn world wants freedom. You know." So it does produce a technical problem in the sense of that other people may want to have respond in kind, but maybe that's exactly what we want to do, is move towards clearing up our past. You know, we can't get past our past. And this goes for, I changed it. For those who came in a little later on, I changed the title, Acknowledgement and Forgiveness, a Black and White Issue, to Acknowledgement and Forgiveness, Healing Our Racial History. Because I think this, if it's done, maybe one of the things is that it becomes a model. And this can be more than a philosophical discussion because, as I said, the poem which I read was for an International Forgiveness Week. And I think a lot of the good ideas that we have, you know, as positive people, is it just lacks the same intensity and strength that the people, that the forces that are negative. And, you know, the simple thing of how much money goes into the war machine, as opposed to how much money goes into daycare centers or nursing, prenatal care, whatever. There's a tremendous amount of energy that goes in that, and that's what we see in terms of manifest reality. We see the lopsided of negatives. But if we put forth the same kind of energy, and if you, like I said, what I like to see is something like that done, make a big deal of it. Make a big deal of it. So those are some thoughts, but just getting back so we can keep this in a discussion mode. In terms of compensation, what are the feelings about compensating for past racial injustices? And we have precedences. It was done with the Japanese. There was a time that African Americans or blacks were told that they were going to get 40 acres and a mule. And I thought, boy, that would be great today, 40 acres and a mule. If I just made a parking lot out of it, I'd be okay. You know? So, but I mean, what's the feeling in the room about compensation?
Dan, I've got something. I read a letter to the editor, and a black man, African man, American, was in jail in the county that I was living in, Collis County. And he says, I want a piece of America like everybody else. And at the time, I had 21 building lots. And I thought, I'm going to call him, and I'm going to tell him that he can have two of these lots, because it takes two to make a building lot. Mm-hmm. It's 25 foot wide, and I give him two of them mm-hmm. side by side. So anyway, I called the jail, and the jailer says, well, you can't talk to him right now. He has to call you collect. And then he says, is that all right? And I said, that's fine. I said, have him call me collect. And so I got him on the phone, and I said, I read your letter to the editor, and I said, I'm concerned. And I said, I'm a concerned American. And I said, I believe in equal rights. That's mm-hmm. what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you can have these two lots for $3,500. And I said, you don't have to give me anything down. And I said, you give me $60 a month when you get out of jail. And I said, you can have a piece of America. And I said, as far as you learning how to know how to building a house, I said, you come and see me. And I said, I'll help you build a house. Well, I never heard anything from this man. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, everybody isn't like me, okay? Mm-hmm. But I did make that effort, mm-hmm. and I make an effort to a lot of people, mm-hmm. and to help people.
Yeah, the thing that I see that is important is that these overtures, these extensions, are done from a place of love and compassion, and not from a place of guilt. And that's what I'm working at, to release the burden of guilt from whites who are dealing with that, and to release the burden of anger from blacks, so that when we operate and interact, it's not from guilt, it's not from anger or manipulation on the guilt or what like, but it's just that we've cleared that history, we've cleared that past, and now we're operating on a human level, you know. Right. And so it's real important, because otherwise it's not going to work in any long-term system. If people are operating from resentment and guilt, It's pretty soon you end up getting angry again, right. And that doesn't work. So that's, I think that's important, you know.
You made the parallel of the Japanese. Mm-hmm. Now that was a case where our government had violated our own laws, our own rules, our own mm-hmm. system, and it was within the lifetime of us, and we were carrying the guilt for something that our generation had done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then this payment, while it probably will never satisfy some of the Japanese, and I'm not sure it represented real love and forgiveness necessarily as much as guilt, getting rid of our guilt. Mm-hmm. But it was a relatively small sum.
I think it was $20,000 for each.
But
yeah,
when you add that up, what kind of compensation are you talking about? What would it take to satisfy what you're talking about?
Well, that's,
or would it satisfy?
Let me say, I came in here more with questions, and looking for information and support than I did with having specific what we should do. But in regards to, I think that Was it during the World War II that they were incarcerated?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. If in fact the compensation should be done, and that's what we're still questioning, I don't know if it's not valid to say that. Well, let me put it this way. Let me put it the way. Let me answer in two ways. In terms of when I talk to aggravated blacks, they would say to that, they would say, well, we were promised the 40 acres and the mules, and you never fulfilled the promise. And that the amount of injustices that came down, not only were they back then, but they are still continuing and still happening. And one of the questions I may have read, didn't read, to what point, if we're going to forgive, where does it begin and end? Are we saying from the beginning of slavery to the day we decide to forgive and give compensation or whatever? But wherever that period ends, then it is inclusive of, it probably will be somewhat within the time frame we're working. So I don't think I really answered your question. I don't know if I can, but I think that there are grounds for compensation, or there could be argued grounds for compensation. And I'm not saying necessarily that it should be financial or anything else. It may just be symbolically where a day is set aside. It may just be stating that we want to, as America, to acknowledge and forgive. I don't know.
I suspect that for many people, the Martin Luther King Day is exactly what you're talking about. That it represents this kind of, we do really care about these people.
Well, the thing about, and here again, I'll go back to intentionality. The thing about intentionality, for it to be, it's stronger as it gets specific. The more specific you get. Martin Luther King Day is honoring what is considered by many blacks and whites as one of the slain heroes. It's honoring that man who tried to further the dream. It's not so much saying in specifics that we committed some offenses and we want to acknowledge and forgive that. It's saying this was a great man. He was about a great cause. He died, and we're honoring that. And what I'm trying to get to is something that will wash and rinse clean all the past history. Yeah, Bruce.
Oh, sorry. With the Native American side, the Northwest Washington in '87, there was a public apology written to Native American people for past wrongs, and it was signed by 9 different bishops from denominations of people. And one of the parts of that was asking as church-wide people for a forgiveness. And going up to Canada a year ago, one of the things that is hard with people with that background, my background, is that it is part of our work too, is working on trying to accept that apology and start working on going from what has gone on before and start learning how we can work anew to bridge some of those gaps that have been raised. And as a church-wide people, I think one of the things that as a church organization is not be a social kind of program, but standing alongside those different ethnic people. Mm-hmm. And being an equal with each other, sort of like holding the hand to the other person and leading them along. The things that they always struggle with is basically more or less like a land issue type of thing. But in following that with the just recognition itself with Indian tribes and freedom of religion is another big issue with Native American people.
Yeah.
Dan, let me ask you this. Do you think black Americans would be happy with with an area, say, let's take the scenario of 30 square miles, let's say 30 square miles, okay, and make that into an area of theirs,
mm-hmm.
to a point that they can do what they want to do with it,
mm-hmm.
and build from there, and use that as an inner core, and then.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I've never ever thought about such an issue as what you're bringing up, and it's a good point.
Well, there's a couple of things that this gentleman raised that was good, and I want to address, and then what you're raising. One, realistically, you know, we're not going to please all the people.
No,
I mean, there's going to be some what's the word, naysayers or whatever, people who are just going to find a reason to find fault with anything. Two, that I don't want it to flip over. I mean, in the compensation has to be done in a manner whereas it doesn't result in resentment from the other side, the people who are given the compensation.
Right.
I would personally not like to see something that is done that creates a separatist. Like, this is our land, like an enclave or a separation within the United States. I believe that the evolution of mankind is coming into a oneness, and that when we move into separation, that we are backstepping. So that could be a dangerous point in the compensation. Whereas, okay, we'll give you the land, that's your land, do what you want. And then everybody moves to that land, and then we're still separate. I don't want to see that. I'm coming from what I've heard over the years, that a lot of people, particularly those blacks who are sincerely trying to move ahead, what I hear a lot of them saying is, if I could just get a feeling that someone to say, and what I feel personally in terms of situations sometimes, I did you wrong, I'm sorry. Okay, it's fine, let's go on. Because, I mean, this is what the psychologists say. A lot of times when things are done, a lot of times all you really want is a sincere acknowledgement. And in the case of the gentleman with the Indians, see, to me, that situation for our children, for ourselves, I hadn't heard about that. And I'm fairly investigative of reading and stuff, but I hadn't heard about it. Maybe my own lack of not being up on things. But that should have been, to me, a big deal. That should have been take off the Rose Bowl and put that on and whatever. Because those are positive possibilities or images that situations that we can draw from, you know. There's a situation, not to digress, but in Chicago and across the United States, the gangs, you know, which are doing a tremendous amount of killing on each other, has stopped killing and was moving towards reconciliation in a peace mode. And it wasn't really getting the kind of publicity. It wasn't getting the psychic support of saying, you guys are going to stop shooting each other. That sounds great. It either got shot down or whatever. So I'm groping. I'll be honest. These are ideas, and I'm just throwing them out here and looking for help. But in regards to them, it, you know, I mean, I don't know realistically if a lot of land should be given, but I do know that if compensation is decided or was decided on to be given, it should be done in something other than a offhanded manner, it should be something that is done in a very strong and sincere. Yeah, I'm sorry, Bruce, because you had him before.
Okay.
Yeah.
A few quick reactions. One, there's a specificity problem in terms of reparations. What you said about the Japan, or the Japanese, the Nisei in this country, is a good point. You had an identifiable group of people
mm-hmm.
who had been wronged in a specific way by a specific entity. The question with reparations for African Americans is, who's the one doing the reparation? Is it the government? Is it all the white churches? Is it, you know, all white people collectively? And we exempt anybody who doesn't classify themselves as white. So there is a specificity problem
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
with reparations, even though the idea,
mm-hmm.
in principle,
mm-hmm.
might be attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And the other comment I have is, even if you do give reparations, each person gets, I think the land idea is a daft idea because the South Africans created these homelands, which are analogous to what you're talking about here. Give them their own homeland, like Transkei. Mm-hmm. Which is a poverty pit, which
mm-hmm.
brings me to my final point, which is there's an economic factor, there's a banking factor, there's an investment factor here that will be the case if every black in the country got $50,000,
mm-hmm.
$100,000.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a tremendous, I mean, they're interrelated, we all know this,
mm-hmm.
you know, urban,
mm-hmm.
drug,
mm-hmm.
Male role model problem, unemployment problem,
mm-hmm.
they're all mixed together.
Right, right.
And until we address those questions in terms of policy at the top level of government and policy in terms of the lending structure in this country and the capital that's going into the ghettos and into the urban areas and into black-owned businesses, et cetera, until
mm-hmm.
we get that on the road,
mm-hmm.
Nothing that we do at the symbolic, specific, or even fiduciary level in terms of reparations is actually going to erase or even address the problem of, you know, 50, 60, 70% unemployment, 90%
mm-hmm.
under
mm-hmm.
in terms of a certain specific group of young blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Who see their role models as drug pushers.
Mm-hmm.
Until we do that, we're not going to do anything about that tremendous problem of the creation, and I agree it's a creation of whites, of a black underclass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the you said a lot of good things, and I'm trying to address some of them. What I was thinking about it was in terms of specifically who we're talking about making this gesture of acknowledgement was the American government. I was thinking of the government. I wasn't putting it on people per se, but as a government, as a representative of the people. That was what I was saying specific, because it has been done in other situations. As regards to the compensation issue, again, I'm putting out possibilities. We're looking at, would it be something that the president would step forth and make an announcement? Would it be a day of acknowledgement? Would it be compensation? If so, would it take the form of remunerations or for money? So it was just putting out there to see which of these might be most viable. And then the intent or what I was trying to look at in terms of the effect was not so much to alter the monster of complexity in regards to changing the physical situation that a lot of blacks find themselves into now. I was looking at something a little more humbler and a little more, you could say, subtle, elusive. What was addressing the emotional and psychic baggage that's been carrying on. And I'm a believer that ideas planted start to emanate things of themselves if they've given enough intensity and focus over a longer period of time. So I wasn't looking at this as something that was going to,
It's not going to be the magic bullet.
Not the magic bullet in the physical sense of change in the economic structure, but maybe a healing, a balm of some sort in terms of how we as a group of people are affecting each other in terms of that, you know. And so, any other questions? Yeah.
Two thoughts. The bishops and other church leaders in the Northwest related to the Native Americans, I thought one of the strengths of that was the church, in a way, didn't wait for the whole society to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I think we need to talk, especially predominantly white churches, need to talk more seriously about what we do without waiting for the government and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a form of communal repentance.
Right.
And
right.
Secondly, I don't know if you have comments on this, but I'm amazed sometimes at the spirit of forgiveness of black people throughout the world. You know, I think if white people had done to them in America what black people had, I'm not sure it would have been such a nonviolent response. I think sometimes we should stand in awe and wonder. And also, what I observed in Africa, in South Africa, where, especially now in the nation of Namibia, the new predominantly black government has adopted what's called the policy of national reconciliation. Basically, as a black government, they forgive those who oppress them before the liberation, and are inviting them to help in forming a new nation. When you move up to the Balkans or other more white areas, the rule of life is retribution that is carried from generation to generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think as white Christians, we need to just spend time sitting at the knees or sitting on the floor before our black brothers and sisters and just learning what forgiveness means in a real communal sense and not just a personal individual.
Yeah.
And the spirit of forgiveness that's in the Namibia, and after those people were treated brutally, and I mean brutally, I mean torture, I mean death, I mean children, civilians being bombed by the white people, banks being bombed during Friday afternoons, you know, the whole families wiped out, tanks running through houses, killing people, I mean, just year after year after year. And to turn around after the liberation and say we adopt a policy of national reconciliation, which is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when do we just say stop, let's listen and learn from the people, that some type of spirit, I think, maybe has emerged out of Africa. Do you have comments on that?
Well, you were saying some good things as you were talking. The phrase went through my head, and it came through earlier. I think it's biblical. The sins of the parents are visited upon the kids, even to the second and third generation. And I guess at the core of all that, I'm just trying to see ways that we can break that cycle. Because see, I do feel that at this point in history, there are enough people with consciousness of all colors that, given the right directions, asking the right questions, and going in the right manner, we can change something. You know, I mean, this is a kind of a heavy subject, but I feel like we're people of light, and that we can handle the heaviness. And because it's not about it's not adversarial. It's not about right or wrong. It's just about, you know, we can handle it because we're at that point where we can feel free enough. You know, but you know, to answer one of the things, I know that there are a lot of people, blacks, who really are wanting to forgive and have forgiven. And the one of the questions that I had in here, is the whole thing hypocritical given that the situation still continues? And I think even though it still continues, my personal belief is that it would still be good because it would be a reminder. It would be a beacon in the dark that something is said, and maybe that will foster. I mean, once you acknowledge that you've done wrong, and maybe this is a little too ideal, but once you acknowledge that you've done something wrong and you ask forgiveness, it's a little harder to go back and do that same wrong, you know. So those are the thoughts. Yes.
Regarding compensation, I can only speak from a personal perspective. I don't think monetary compensation is a good idea in general. For me, the best kind of compensation I can receive or give when I'm personally involved is just a change in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's been attempted by integrating the schools and whatnot, but it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I've had very little contact with people of any color other than white simply because of where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And and I don't like prejudice. I've been a victim of
mm-hmm.
prejudice
mm-hmm.
for various reasons, and I don't like receiving it or giving it. And yet I bet there are ways that I do it that I'm not aware of. And so maybe a way of compensation would be requiring, and maybe this has been tried, school curriculums to include, I think all children need to be taught how to get along with each other, period, no matter what color
yes.
they are, how to develop and maintain committed relationships, how to negotiate, how to commit. And part of that could be, you know, how do we act in ways that are prejudiced and how can we change that?
Mm-hmm.
Just like in some school systems, at least in our area, they're starting to teach junior high school students about sexual discrimination because
mm-hmm.
they're harassing each other and that kind of thing. That's just a thought.
That's a good thought. Yeah. That's the continuation that is brought on in terms of the racism in regards to the children is one of the concerns that people have in terms of being able to forgive. It's been able to, you know, like the saying, it's long past time to forgive, but it's much too soon to forget, because and I guess true forgiveness is to forget, you know.
If I bring it up a little bit further, also with Native American point of view in 1992 with the 500th birthday of Columbus. I worked on the writing for a program that was written through the Lutheran Church background, and took us 2 years in writing. And from Seattle, I worked with the Student Council of Greater Seattle and made it into an ecumenical document and worked with other denominations to strengthen and build up the document on how, as a church itself, could work with 1992. And part of the way we increased the document was, like this woman was saying, was that part of a sentence we wrote in there was that in a educational level, the people that are taking classes, that they understand what the true history of America is
mm-hmm.
and know what has gone on with people of different, both racial background and what has happened in the United
mm-hmm.
States alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that those people that are in the education do know what the real history of both we as Native American people, but other people as a whole know what has gone on in the United States.
I think that's excellent, because you know, as you and she were saying, then that starts to break the cycle of the continuation of it. You know, I know for years, you know, growing up, I didn't realize that Egypt was in Africa for so long. You know, it's just there's a lot. So to be able to get it at the most fertile time in our development, which is a child's mind, would actually be a great way to acknowledge, you know. And here again, you know, I just want to be clear, it's not that I'm pushing for compensation, I'm just putting forth possibilities to achieve this acknowledgement as that is a possibility. But that's a very good way to do it, if we can turn it around in terms of the new generation coming in, where they have an understanding of the history, the real history. It's his story. It ain't my story. It's his story. It ain't her story. It's his story. You know. So that would be a great way to initiate some change.
How about the voting of the Black American? Is he or she, are they pretty much all registering and giving out the vote like they should?
So that they're
able to have their own voice.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know, I want to say this. And I know Jesse Jackson, he made a big push for it. And I gotta commend him, you know, for what he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me qualify everything by saying I'm speaking as one African American from my perspective, not as representative of the collective awareness of all African Americans. But my perspective is there's a great deal of apathy in among African Americans in the political system, in the system in general, you know. And it's a kind of attitude, well, you know, why try? I think that's changing for a lot, but there is a lot of that going on. And another discussion, another time that I like to deal with in terms of affecting external change and dealing with how much is dealing with self-responsibility, because I believe that I believe in self-responsibility. And as a person and as a representative of my race, you know, mm-hmm. of the African-American race. My race is human race. But so to answer your question, I think it's getting better, even though it's apathy. And the thing is that sometimes then what happens is that there is lack of sophistication in the voting. It's, well, if he's Black, I'll vote for him. If you know, and I maybe it's not just, I guess people do this a lot of times. They vote for, you know, if you are Polish and he's a Polish running for office, well, I'm vote. And we don't look at the qualities, at the qualifications of the person, and the person who may happen to be Polish may really have a better impact on the Blacks in that ward or whatever than the person who's Black. And people just, they vote, when you vote across color lines or just for colors or whatever, you know, sooner or later you're gonna lose, because that's not where we really are akin, you know. It's more about consciousness now, where people are coming from.
What would you think of quotas in the way of compensation, like quotas in representation in government and quotas in business at all levels, including management and ownership?
Well, quotas, you know, is very controversial. That was one of the things I put down in terms of quotas. Does that then go into what's called reverse discrimination? Should somebody, that's a form of compensation, and should somebody
be put into a position just because of their color. And as much as it, and this is my personal view, as much as it does bring up, reduce some of the disparity of some of the imbalance in it, at the same time, I don't know if you can do that in a heavy fashion and put people in position who are not qualified for the position. You know, and you know, I just have a lot of questions. Because then the way people, it's a paradoxical situation, the way people start to learn and grow is be put in positions so that they can have experience, you know, and but that's a very balanced situation, you know. I think quotas can be helpful in a very guided way. I think indiscriminate quotas can create another beast, another problem, can create resentment, has created resentment, and go the other way. So I think it's like a seasoning in certain places, in certain ways it can make this whole soup better, but if you lose too much, you're going to kill the whole stew. And that's my personal feeling.
I think the compensation really should have been around 1880.
We should have got that 40 acres and a mule.
I mean, you're right. Something should have happened there, Dan. I fully agree with you.
Yeah.
I fully agree with you. It's a sad problem that it should have been taken care of a long time ago.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, the whole country is allergic to quotas now. If you just whisper the word, you're politically dead. If you're Atlantic Lanier, and somebody gets the president's ear and says, Lanny Lanier is for quotas. Oh, no! She says she isn't.
Yeah.
No kind of reverse discrimination or
yeah.
you know, quota system or whatever. But if you're perceived to have that kind of orientation, you're dead.
Yeah.
Believe. Mm-hmm. So just on a practical level, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Okay, well, I think all we, you know, we've done, and I shouldn't say all because I don't want to diminish it, but we raised some questions and maybe created some thoughts, and maybe something will come out of this for a greater purpose. But I appreciate everybody for coming, and I'm glad to be able to share it with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.